the Menendez brothers.
We are talking about Pamela Smart, Andrea Yates.
I think that is kind of one of the first things that started my true crime obsession.
We're definitely going to be diving into the legal and psychological parts of this case.
First of all, you shouldn't be friends with people that ask you to cut up somebody's body. And on the flip side, you shouldn't be friends with somebody who is willing to cut up somebody's body.
If she is abusing drugs at 9 and 12 years old, it would make sense that there was some significant abuse going on in the house.
That's not normal.
Never trust the mother or the lover.
Who is a self-professed drug dealer in court?
That's why we always say get a lawyer, because you just fed them this information that they didn't have, and they're now using it against you.
Hi, everybody. My name's Mary.
And I'm Deirdre.
And we're from Not Your Normal Murder Podcast. With my experience in psychiatry
and my experience in criminal justice,
we bring a fresh perspective on small town cases and those cases you can't forget.
If you love true crime, a little bit of sarcastic banter, but lots of objective research, come find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know what's the best part of Hump Day? There's a new episode every Wednesday.
See you there.
True Consequences is a proud member of the Borellis Podcasters Guild.
Look deeper.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundeen.
Hi, and welcome back to True Consequences. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundeen, and today I'm joined by a very special guest by the name of Joelle Leah. Joelle, welcome.
Thank you, Eric.
I'm really glad to have you here. Not glad to be talking about this. This case is really tough and hard to get through, but I'm glad that you're here. And I think I reached out to you a while back to start this process, and we're finally here. So I'm glad you're here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for covering Victoria's case.
Yeah, it's you know, my brother's story and my family's story. Watching Victoria's case and watching other cases like Omari and all these other kids has been beyond heartbreaking for me, because my brother was murdered 33 years ago, and you would hope that things would improve in this state with regards to child abuse, and they just don't seem to be getting any better. Progress seems to be extremely slow. And Victoria's case in particular, it really got to me, because I just feel like it's been so many years of this happening over and over and over and over again, and nothing changes. And I don't really know what it's going to take to change things, but I'm hoping that having these conversations and making people aware of what's going on in this state might motivate them to do things differently, to think differently when they're voting, to think differently because I know that a lot of people, let's say, for example, with judges, mm-hmm. They may just vote down the party line, you know, right. of whatever party they're with. And that's not always the best way to go, especially with judges. Right. You want to look at their records. You want to look at what they stand for. And so I think that having these conversations is really important, as difficult as it is and as painful as it is for people to hear it and for us to talk about it. It's important to know why things are the way they are.
Absolutely.
So if you don't mind, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me how you became involved in advocating for this case and for Victoria. And just give a little bit of history on you and the whole process, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, I moved to New Mexico in 2012, right before the Omari ordeal. And that was absolutely heartbreaking. And then I'm sure there were a couple other cases before Victoria's. And I was just shocked at New Mexico's leniency towards some of the most seriously violent offenders there are. Mm-hmm. And it kind of awakened me and when Victoria's murder happened, it was just so outrageous and horrific that it just made me want to step up. And like you said, the first step is honest conversations, speaking about it for awareness, and letting people know what is really going on here in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have a Facebook page that you manage.
Right. Victoria Martins Deserves Justice. And then there's a Victoria Martins Voice page.
Okay. How did you get involved in advocating and, all the things that you've been doing for Victoria?
Well, basically what happened was I will never forget where I was when I first got the news, sitting at McDonald's having a smoothie, and I first heard the call for a deceased 10-year-old, and they first thought it was a result of a domestic, and that was horrific enough. Mm-hmm. And then later that day, I had a girlfriend call me and tell me that it was her daughter's friend, and she was absolutely hysterical. And then as more and more came out, I saw why.
Yeah.
So I decided that I would start doing whatever I could to speak up, you know, and make people aware of what's going on in our state, the numbers of child abuse cases and child sexual assault are off the charts. Yeah. And it seems like our judges, our politicians, they're not changing the laws. You know, they're basically giving them a slap on the wrist, and then they proceed to do it again.
Right. When you look at somebody like Jessica Kelly, mm-hmm. who was basically in a revolving door of being arrested and being released and being arrested and being released. And that is unfortunately very common in this state. Repeat offenders continually are cycling through that revolving door. Right. And then when they get out, they continue to do horrible things. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like a no-brainer to the everyday person, like you and I, to say, like, this, the problem is that you're letting her out all the time. Like, that's the problem.
Absolutely.
That's why she keeps doing this stuff.
Right.
Because you're allowing her.
Right.
Yeah. It's absurd and it's mind-boggling. And the more I learn about the state of the justice system in this state, the more angry I become, and the more infuriating. Yeah, right. The more infuriating it is. Anything else you want to say about your advocacy, or where people can find you, or anything like that?
You can, again, find me on the Victoria Martins Voice page, and then we have Victoria Martins Deserves Justice. And I also will talk to, I've had a lot of family members reach out and contact me and try to not give them so much legal advice, but to tell them, hey, maybe you should start here and the steps to take, you know, and try to help them advocate either for their no longer living child relative, or I have a couple of people that I'm working with right now that have children that are being abused by either another family member, significant other. And I just try to support them and give them the best advice I know how to give them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if anybody ever needs a platform to share their stories, my show is always open. I'm always wanting to help families of victims to get their story out there, because sometimes that's the only way that they can get the district attorney and the attorney general to pay attention to what's happening on the case. And I'm happy to be able to use this platform for that. That's exactly why I created this show. So I'd like to just kind of create an open invitation for you to let people know that that's a possibility.
Oh, I absolutely will.
Yeah. Let's talk about this case. We're coming up on the 4-year anniversary of Victoria's death. Do you mind kind of going through the details of what happened?
Okay.
And then as the story evolves, I know that there's a lot of twists and turns and false confessions and things like that have happened. So it can get a little confusing, but just whatever you feel is important to Victoria's story.
Okay. Well, basically, we'll begin on August 24th when Michelle Martins called the police after Jessica Kelly had just assaulted her and Fabian with the iron. She had that big scar down her, and Fabian was kind of socked up too.
And a black eye.
And, right. And then they took all of them, went into custody on the 24th, and Michelle and Fabian both did police interrogations without an attorney. They were a little over 7 hours long, and there were some really, really horrific things that were discussed. And Jessica Kelly lawyered up right away, never said a word. And then, let's see. Basically, we were all preparing that these three people would go to trial and be held accountable for what they've done. And that absolutely hasn't been the case. Mm-hmm. Michelle Martins was the first to get a plea deal. She's facing, 12 to 15 years. And they're giving her good time if she earns it, which is a 50% reduction because they don't deem it a violent crime. And that, to me in itself, was just absolutely appalling. What could be more horrific than a child who was, it seeming that she was sexually assaulted that night, and she was severely, beaten and roughed around before she was killed.
Yeah.
And then we were mutilated. Right. Yes. They cut off her arms, both of her arms. They cut her chest open and took out ribs 3 through 8, heart, part of her liver, and then they were starting to take off, I believe it was her left leg or right leg. And then I guess they must have had some kind of dispute, I'm assuming. And that's when Jessica attacked him with the iron. And then it caused Michelle and Fabian to flee. And then not so long after, the police were called. They went to Michelle's door and knocked, and Jessica opened it, slammed it right back in their face. She proceeded to go to the bathroom and light Victoria's remains on fire, as in hopes to try to destroy evidence.
It's just a nightmare. It's the worst. It's got to be one of the worst cases in New Mexico history.
I think it is. Yeah. At least in Albuquerque's history, it seems to be one of the most brutal, horrific cases, that I've seen.
Yeah. So I understand that once she lit Victoria's body on fire, she jumped out off the balcony and tried to run away from the police.
Right. And luckily, she broke her leg and the police were able to detain her. And the initial impressions of the case were all based on parts of Michelle's statement and parts of Fabian, which there was some truth, but there was a whole lot of lies and deceptions. Yeah. And Jessica, like I said, made no statement. She had over 2 years, said nothing. And then once Michelle got a plea bargain, I believe she was the next one that was offered. And her narrative doesn't quite fit with the witness statements as to what the witnesses saw that day.
Right. I know that she was she the one that made the claims of a different male being involved?
Absolutely. Okay. After two plus years, suddenly there's a fourth unidentified, well-dressed white male that came to the apartment while Fabian and Michelle were out. And I guess he asked for Fabian. And supposedly Jessica said, oh, she's not here, but the little girl's there. And claimed she led some stranger in the room while she was methed out of her gourd. And that person killed Victoria.
Does that seem likely to you?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It seems like she's trying to create or fabricate this different sequence of events to make herself less guilty. You think that too?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I fully agree with that. And there were many. It was a hot night. There were many people outside. And numerous people reported seeing Victoria kind of propped up against the wall. And Michelle did initially say that they gave her meth to calm her down, but there were no drugs found in her system, just alcohol. So that kind of fits, you know, she's kind of wobbly and propped up against the wall. It was her 10th birthday. And later, Fabian and Michelle left. Numerous witnesses saw Jessica grab Victoria by her hair and yank her in the apartment.
Oh, my God.
The next time they saw any activity in that apartment or in that area was Jessica carrying her dead body down the steps. At the time, we did not know that she was deceased. We weren't sure if she was, you know, intoxicated, drugged, or what was
sleeping. Yeah.
Right. But now we know that she was in fact dead when she was trying to carry her down the steps. And I guess Michelle and Fabian pulled in and she quick ran back up the steps with her, put her in her bedroom. At some point, she told Fabian basically that Victoria had been killed. Right. And at that point, the two of them conspired to dispose of Victoria.
Right.
And luckily that didn't happen because I think we'd still be in a completely unsolved case at this point.
Yeah, I think it would be very tough to prove what happened. I mean, it still is, I think, on some level, right. But the fact that her body was still there probably helped to expedite them at least being arrested.
Absolutely.
What's happened after that has been a bit of a shit show. Forgive my language.
Oh, it sure has.
But at least they were arrested immediately.
Right.
Okay. Do you think that any of what Michelle said has any truth to it?
Well, I do know there is some truth in it that Victoria was sexually abused prior to Fabian and Jessica coming into the picture, as she did have an STD that dated back somewhere 4 or 6 months or so. And that really fits in the time frame of things that I pretty much know.
Okay.
But I really don't think that anybody but Michelle and whoever else was involved at that point were aware of the abuse of Victoria. I mean, she was still participating in things at school and after school activities and seemingly a happy, well-adjusted child until she wasn't anymore.
Was Michelle trafficking her for drugs?
Michelle's, believe it or not, Michelle's was not on drugs at the time. When they arrested all three suspects, they got search warrants to get blood, hair, all that. And in New Mexico, as most states, you don't get tested for drugs or alcohol involving a crime unless it's a motor vehicle or a boat or something like that, a moving type of violation or an accident. So at some point, I guess Michelle told her lawyer that she wasn't on drugs, and they did do a drug test, I'm assuming on her blood, and she came back with absolutely nothing in her system.
Wow.
And that, not that drugs isn't ever an excuse for any of that, but that just made it all the more earth-shattering that here's some person that's fairly well educated. She did finish college. She was working a job and seeming on the outside, you know, like a normal mom of two kids. And then Victoria's dad is unknown. Michelle has never revealed if she even knows who Victoria's biological father is.
Mm.
And then when Victoria was a baby, she got involved with Victoria's little brother's dad. So he became Victoria's dad in all respects.
Sure.
And then 7 years later, when they broke up, is when all the stuff started happening.
And do you think Michelle was aware of what was happening? Was she involved?
She was absolutely aware because there was a previous boyfriend of Michelle's who tried to kiss Victoria. And Victoria also said that this man came into her room in the middle of the night and I guess Michelle perhaps maybe even walked in and he's in the room in the dark in this 9-year-old child's bed. What do you think's going on? You know?
Right.
And then I guess Michelle did get rid of this boyfriend, but it seems like that started a vicious cycle.
it's just horrifying. I mean, looking at pictures of Victoria and without knowing her, she just looked like the sweetest, most loving child. Just like a normal 10-year-old.
Absolutely. And from everything I've learned, I didn't have the pleasure of meeting Victoria. But again, she was one of my girlfriend's daughter's little best friends. And they had nothing but good words about how kind of a person, how loving, how sweet, fun. You know, she was just your happy, a lucky child. Like I said, until she wasn't.
Just a regular little girl.
Right.
Okay, anything else that we need to know about Jessica or Michelle before we start talking about Fabian?
Well, as you said, Jessica had a very long, violent history. Jessica did partake in a female being raped at MDC some years prior, and she never was forced to register as a sex offender. I believe she kind of either lured the girl in or kept watch while somebody else sexually assaulted her with some type of object that led this woman to be severely hurt by this. And like you said, Jessica was just a revolving door, in and out, in and out. Michelle had no criminal history whatsoever. And in a way, I'm going to say this, she did kind of seem a little naive to that, those types of people in that life. So yeah. I think that helped facilitate things along.
Well, and I know that according to her and Fabian, they met online on a dating website.
Right.
Which is a little bit of a cautionary tale for people. You don't really know
absolutely
who you're meeting. You only know what they're presenting to be online. And I think it's important to remember that for anybody. So Fabian he's been a hot topic in the state, especially among child abuse advocates and people like you and I who want to call out injustice as it pertains to child abuse in this state. His case has been completely frustrating and upsetting. And for those of you listening who don't know this, he was released from jail pending sentencing on his own recognizance in November of last year, November of 2019.
Right.
He was involved in this, you know, to the degree that he was involved, that may not be very clear, but it's clear that he participated in this on some level.
Oh, absolutely.
Specifically with regards to trying to dispose of Victoria's body. I mean, that was pretty clear.
Absolutely. He did participate in that part of it.
So let's talk about him. Let's talk about his involvement, and then let's talk about the judge's decisions that have been made, and then even up to this week, the most recent revelations that have come out from the trial. If you don't mind, let's go ahead and get into that.
Okay. Well, I think when Fabian was actually released, we were all just dumbfounded at how could you let this man, I don't even want to call him that, free after just what he's admitted to. In his police interrogation, he admitted to raping Victoria's corpse. And that, unfortunately, is not a crime in New Mexico. I have my suspicions that he conceded to that in case they found DNA or something linking him.
Right.
It's just so sad.
So your suspicion is that perhaps it was done prior to her dying.
Right.
That was his way of explaining it away.
Right. Of fabricating some kind of story should they find anything to link him to the crime.
And he also has a history of crime.
Yes, he does. He has quite a history of abuse against women, some other child abuse charges. I don't know if he directly abused the child, but I think he punched one of his baby's mothers in the face when she was, like, pregnant and stuff like that. So he and Jessica both had a pretty lengthy, violent, predatorial type of history.
And they were both known to use drugs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So he confessed to, I guess, raping Victoria when she was dead.
Right.
He confessed to helping dismember her too, right?
Yes, he did. And I think he probably had no choice because when he was, the police approached him, he was trying to clean up the blood off of him and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm a mess. And, you know, kind of acted like it was from Michelle's wound or whatever. But we know that that's not the totality of it.
Well, and he had changed his socks too, apparently, because they were soaked in blood.
Yes. Yeah. He was, I mean, it was very, very gruesome. And they, it was reported too that when they subpoenaed, I guess, maybe Jessica's phone records, she had been looking at Google Maps. So I can only assume she was looking for a place to dispose of her and didn't quite get that far, thank God.
Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, it just seems so stupid that they even bothered calling the cops when they're in the middle of all of this stuff. Like,
right.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
But I'm glad they did. I'm not saying that that
was... Absolutely, yeah. it was the best thing they could have done.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so he was released in November. I'm not very clear on what Judge Brown's reasoning is. I know that he blamed the prosecutors. He said that it was their fault that he had to release Fabian.
Yes.
But I'm not really clear. Do you have any insight into what his reasoning was?
Well, he deemed that they didn't have enough evidence to prove him as like a clear and present danger to society, which I will never understand. You know, it just doesn't fit. And he basically left him out. I guess a few months down the road, Fabian applied for some more lenient, you know, conditions of his release, and he was granted that. And then before we knew it, we found out that Fabian was dating another woman with children, which was a conditions release violation. And they had a hearing on that. And it ended up that Judge Brown is allowing this man to be around any child unsupervised. And basically the only restriction he has on him is a GPS. He's allowed to leave the county for work and, you know, just do things that people convicted or even out on pretrial release, they don't have those luxuries for much lesser cases than this one.
Well, and especially when you're suspected of being involved in such a horrific child abuse case.
Right.
Like, to, it just seems like common sense that you would restrict that person's access to children.
Absolutely.
I mean, he shouldn't be out in the first place. But if you're going to do that, like,
right, for the love of God, don't let him near anybody's children. And I don't understand why I wasn't, like, had somewhere where he could be supervised. I don't even understand why he was released to begin with. It's appalling.
And how was his confession deemed not enough evidence? Like, he confessed to those acts.
Right. He did. And that I can't understand either.
I don't understand.
I'm just at a loss for words. They're not saying it was coerced so much, but like, he was just... Both he and Michelle were just agreeing to whatever the police said. No, you know, there was some of that, but there was also, you know, some really significant revelations made that were just horrendous.
It's just maddening. I believe that he's retiring. This judge is retiring very soon.
Yes. 12/31/20.
Not soon enough. Let's hope that whoever replaces him at least is more willing to stand up for what's right for children in the state, because it's clear that his perspective is skewed.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think he's totally lost touch with reality. And I wonder, would he want Fabian around his grandchildren?
Right.
I don't think so. You know?
Right. It's just absurd. So recently, Fabian's attorneys have requested the case be dropped.
Yes. And they're saying he didn't get a speedy trial, which Now, this case, as I showed you, you know, just the amount of evidence and things to process. There were hundreds and hundreds of crime scene photos, autopsy photos. The case is so in depth because of the horrific nature of it that it just seems like everything slipped away. Here we thought the day we found out she was murdered, we found out three suspects were arrested. And then Michelle and Fabian did, like I said, 7+ hours without an attorney present of interrogations. And that really alluded to a lot of different things. And I think everybody's still in shock that now there's already been 2 plea deals. Fabian was relieved from jail to begin with. And now the only condition he has is a GPS, which, as we all know, could be cut off at any time. And he could fall into the wind and, you know, we'd never know.
Yeah, Mexico is not very far away from here.
Exactly.
It's very close. I'm hopeful that they will not allow this case to be dropped. But I also know what we're up against here in this state. Whatever you think isn't possible is 100% possible.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody could have imagined that 2 people would get a plea deal and then the third one would be set free. And like I said, the longer he's out, the less his conditions are. He's not allowed around any children unsupervised. I can never, ever, ever understand why. And Judge Brown, I believe, is really out of touch. I mean, you know, for him to say he's not a risk, what could be more risky, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. It just doesn't make any sense. Even if he wasn't involved in the actual abuse, which right. I don't believe is true. But
right.
But let's just say that he isn't.
Okay.
He was there.
Hey, and he helped dismember her, destroy right. evidence, and cover up the brutal murder of a child. You know, there's not too many things that compare on that level.
Right.
Know?
So at the very least, we have destruction of evidence, conspiracy.
Right.
To destroy evidence, conspiracy to cover up a crime.
Right.
Know, all these are all pretty serious charges.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not like jaywalking or anything. This is real.
Right. And he had a choice. Even if he didn't partake in the events prior to Victoria's death, he had a choice right then and there on the spot to either step into his cousin's mess and help her dispose of it, or just get the hell out of here. I'm calling the cops or
right.
something. He did nothing. He was complicit in all the aftermath for sure.
Right, which is at the very least negligence, right? Because
right. You
are a parental type figure in this situation. You're living with your girlfriend. Her daughter's living with you. You may not be an actual parent, but you are a parental figure. You have some responsibility. If Jessica Kelly is your babysitter, she has a responsibility.
Right.
You know, she accepts that responsibility to take care of Victoria. So even if this story about this strange man coming in happened,
right. There's
still responsibility there.
Absolutely. And I don't buy it for 1 second. I'm sorry, but in my opinion, Jessica was only out of prison for 5 days. She was under the influence of at least meth, she's admitted to. She's tweaked out of her gourd. Mm-hmm. You think some chick that's out of prison for 5 days is going to allow some man in and have a murder committed 15 feet from her and she's going to stay in the house? No, I'm not buying it at all. She would have left, you know. Because she would have been like, oh, I'm not going back to prison.
Unless she was involved.
Exactly. And the fact that she's agreed to a 49-year plea deal, that pretty much tells me a lot right there.
Well, it is more than life in prison in New Mexico.
Unfortunately, it is.
Yeah.
But she, too, qualifies for good time. So she could be out in roughly 20-some years. As you said, it's coming up on the 4-year anniversary. So both her and Michelle Martins already have almost 4 years of time served.
It's horrible. It's horrifying. And now we have this situation where the case could just be tossed out against Fabian.
Right.
And then,
that's a real possibility at this point.
It is. I hate to say that, but it is. Yeah. I'm speechless. This whole thing is so frustrating to me. It doesn't make any sense. It seems like whenever it comes to cases like this, our justice system, for some reason, can never get it right.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I talk about this all the time on my show. This isn't a new problem in New Mexico.
No.
This has been happening for decades and decades.
Right, as you're well familiar with your loss of your little brother 33 years ago. And from what I've heard from your podcast, there was a confession, plenty of evidence, and this piece of trash was never charged or held accountable.
Still
That's
free.
That's not acceptable. That is unacceptable by any measures.
And that's the message that is sent to these people, right? That you...
Right.
You can do this and you can get away with it.
Right.
And I'm going to do whatever I can in my power to make sure that changes in this
state. We need a change. How many more children are we going to allow to be victimized, sexually, physically abused, beaten to death, murdered, and not so much in the way of consequences, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of these people get out at some point, and many of them continue on with the activities they were involved in before they got locked up.
Well, and that's one of the things that I've talked about consistently is these people don't change their behavior.
Right.
When you're a child abuser, when you're a child predator, there's something wrong with you.
Absolutely.
Whether it's chemical or mental or emotional or whatever it is, there's something wrong.
Right.
And that doesn't just get fixed on its own.
No, it's a sin. And it seems, to be honest, that once if they do actually go to prison, they just learn how to cover it up better. Mm-hmm. And they learn from past mistakes what to do, what not to do. And it just seems like it's a revolving door, you know?
Yeah. What's your take on Michelle and her involvement?
Well, I'm not sure that Michelle, there's evidence that her and Fabian were not in the apartment when Victoria was murdered. And I'm, as much as I don't like to, you know, kind of side with her, I'm not sure that she was aware that Victoria was murdered until, you know, the aftermath right before 911 got called. I can't say for sure, but it's looking like she may not have been. Yeah, Jessica's own words that they did hide it from Michelle and didn't allow Michelle to go into Victoria's room or anything like that. I guess once Michelle went to bed, that's when they began, you know, to dismember her and just try to wipe away any trace of the crime and themselves. And the alleged fourth person, which I don't buy for a moment. It's just unthinkable, you know?
What's the deal with this mystery DNA they found on her body?
They found a 4 loci sample. And for a full FBI match, they need 13. So this is so small. It was not semen, so it can only be skin cells, saliva, or perspiration. Now, the autopsy didn't show any DNA on Victoria. The only evidence it found as trace besides the sexual assault and her injuries were 3 hairs that were, I think, maybe 1 or 2 on her leg and her arm. We still have never heard whose hair that was. However, if it's any one of those 3, being they were all living there, they can write that off too, you know? And so this DNA is never, ever enough to match anybody to this case. It could only possibly be used for elimination. And even that, a 3 loci sample when you need 13 isn't going to cut it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's so confusing. And it's hard to know what that even is and where it came from. And
that it actually came from Victoria's shirt and not her body, as we were all led to believe. Mm-hmm. But again, we don't know, you know? There's been some things, even our district attorney, I feel, has failed Victoria miserably. Who is going to accept plea deals from anyone on basically the most horrific case Albuquerque seen, to my knowledge?
Yeah. It makes me wonder, I mean, there had to be a reason, right? Like, did he feel like he didn't have a winnable case? Did he feel like he didn't have enough? Is that why he decided to go that route?
Actually, I'm not totally sure, but I do know if he secures a plea bargain, it's a win for him.
Right.
So to him, you know, it's a win-win situation. Unfortunately, you know, we shouldn't be offering plea deals. I said that from the moment I found out that Michelle was offered one. I wouldn't have given any of them plea deals ever. And, yeah. You know,
I think there's a lot of things that need to change with regard to the prosecution of these cases. One of the biggest issues that I've discovered is that it's pretty common for a prosecutor to decide whether they're going to try a case or not.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really there's nothing compelling them to do that.
Right. So,
for example, my brother's case, I've run this by several prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them will say, I would have declined to prosecute this case. And my opinion on that is that you really shouldn't have a choice. If it's a child who's been abused, you should not have the option to opt out of that, even if you lose. Every case should be brought.
At least fight. I mean, we have mandated reporters. Why aren't you, as a district attorney, mandated to fight for justice for children? I will never understand that.
It just doesn't make any sense. Couple that with offering a plea deal to somebody who is suspected of doing these things. It just doesn't make any sense. And I feel like there just needs to be a tightening up of those things in the prosecutor's office and in the laws in the state to make it so that it's not something you can get away with a slap on the wrist.
Right. And back, I think it was 2017, I helped promote Victoria Martin's Deserves Justice Act, and that was calling for a mandatory 120 years for anybody who murders a child. And there was no fluff, nothing else other than that. And the Roundhouse couldn't even agree on that. It went up in 2018 and 2019, they couldn't even agree to that. So it just seems like, you know, the problem stems much deeper than Judge Brown's, D.A. Torres's failure, CYFD. It seems to be the politics in New Mexico aren't giving justice, you know, for victimized and murdered children.
It's a systemic issue, and it's pervasive. It goes into every level of government and oversight, and it may not be intentional, but the message that the community is getting is that they don't care about the kids in our state.
Right, and that's just sad. I mean, as they say, children are our future. Well, what are you showing? You know, these children, we're not going to believe you if you say you were abused. And even if we do believe you, you may be reunited with that parent, boyfriend, relative, friend, whatever the case. And oftentimes, like you said, they get a slap on the wrist and they've only learned how to not get caught the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they get smart and they learn how the system works and they learn how to plea out and they learn how to do all these other things that they can work to their advantage. And I feel like all of those loopholes need to be closed.
Absolutely.
You know, For other crime, you know, maybe it makes sense to have those things, but I think for child abuse, it's such a different circumstance. It's such a horrifying crime. It shouldn't be a question. There should be no question.
Absolutely, there shouldn't. And it shouldn't be an option to plea out any kind of real substantiated abuse, sexual violence, physical violence. Yeah. Why aren't we fighting for these children? You know, they're going to be left with lifelong impact if they survive. And then, as in your situation, you're left and your mom and your family with the repercussions of losing your brother to child abuse 33 years ago. And when I heard that, it really touched me. And I couldn't believe it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this has been going on, like you said, forever. Mm-hmm. And enough is enough. You know, stand up for our kids. If you are aware of abuse, call it in. That's not snitching. When it's against a child, it's a whole different set of rules.
And if it's not happening, then we hope that CYFD is skilled enough to know what's a real claim and what's not really happening. And I know that mistakes happen and things like that, but it's still like it's your responsibility as a human being to look out for people who can't speak for themselves, who can't fight for themselves, who have no choice, who have no options. And for kids, like, your parents are everything. Even if they're abusing, even if you're being abused, you still, like, as a child, you still want that connection with your mom. You still want that connection with your dad. That's just natural, right? So it's hard for a kid to stand up for themselves in those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're, it seems like I said, our whole state, every aspect, government, you know, our district attorney and other areas, we're all kind of just letting our children down.
Yeah.
And it's come to the point where it's just a miserable failure. These kids aren't getting justice, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can never bring them back or undo the damage that was done to them. But damn it, we gotta hold the people responsible accountable. And if you murder a child, you should never be free again. It shouldn't even be a question.
I have mixed feelings about the death penalty. Mm-hmm. I think in cases like this, it's justified. It's horrifying what they did to Victoria. I can't get over it, and I can't believe that we're still here 4 years later talking about this.
Right, and like I said, nobody, when the three suspects were initially charged, they faced like 19, 21, and 22 charges. Michelle Martin's plea deal, she pled guilty to one count of child abuse resulting in death. Jessica pled to about 6 charges. But the rape, murder cases, they all went away, you know? And they kind of gave them on the lenient side of what we were hoping for in New Mexico to be a result. It didn't happen.
And then we have Fabian. Who knows what he's doing? Who knows who he's hurting now? I don't believe that he is innocent in any way in this situation. Yeah. And I think he needs to pay.
How many more children have to die, be physically abused, sexually abused, till we come together and say, we're not taking this crap anymore. You know, we're going to hold them. Once you're found guilty, that's it. You don't get a second chance. You
know, we need to hold not only suspects accountable, but we need to hold our legislators accountable.
Absolutely.
We need to hold our elected officials accountable. We need to hold CYFD accountable, because every single agency has a part to play in this. And so far, in my lifetime, they have all failed.
And that's unfortunate, because those are supposed to be our recourse for justice and the people who are protecting our children. And there's nothing there. It's become, just an empty void where nothing is changing, you know? It's not getting better, and it's really sad.
It is.
Really sad.
Is there anything else that you want to say to my listeners? either about this case or about anything in general?
Okay. I would have to say pay attention to your children, your family and friends' children, and let them know that if something is happening to them, they are to tell a trusted adult. Tell three of them, tell five of them, tell everybody you can in hopes that somebody will step up and say this is unacceptable and make the report, follow through. Like I said, I don't consider it snitching if you're turning somebody in for child abuse. It's not an issue here, you know? Nobody, even the people committing crimes, most of them wouldn't want their children, you know, hurt. And especially, like I said, Victoria was so brutally murdered and then dismembered and lit on fire. What could be more horrific? And on her 10th birthday, of all things, you know, it's just so sad.
It's the worst possible situation. And I don't think I'll ever be over hearing about that.
Right.
Like I said, it shook me. And it honestly, I think her case, coupled with a few others, along with my brother's case, motivated me to create this show. Because I feel like these stories, a lot of people don't want to hear the details.
Right, unfortunately. And by denying it or sweeping it under the rug, isn't going to create any effective change for the better for our children. And it's not part of them. It's a total disappointment, yeah. You know, to find out that they're not getting any justice here.
Something that I say a lot on my show is what you ignore, you allow.
Absolutely.
And just because you're not speaking up about it, it doesn't mean that you're on the right side. It means that you're on the side of the people who are getting away with this.
Right.
Your silence says more than you know.
Absolutely, because it allows the abuse to continue, where they're either going to have such a hard time mentally, physically, mm-hmm. or they're not going to be here. Like Victoria is not here. You know, her life was taken out on her 10th birthday. You know, nobody thinks that's acceptable, and we need to come together, pay attention to how you vote. Like I said, I would encourage everybody to watch your family, your child family members, their friends, and be vigilant. And if you mm-hmm. suspect that they're being abused, you can make the call anonymously. And like you said, there are checks and balances that hopefully an innocent person doesn't get caught. But when there's innocence, there's usually not evidence to corroborate it.
I agree with you on all of that. I want to say before we wrap this up that I'm very honored to have met you, and I feel this kind of connection to you. I'm grateful for you and all the work that you're doing to get the word out there and to share these stories, as horrific and as tragic as they are. It is so important to have somebody talking about this, which is why I decided to share my story, because my silence also is in a way permitting this to continue to happen because of the shame and everything else that you have going right. through something like that. It's important to tell these stories, because then it lets people know that are in the situation that they're not alone.
Right. You know,
this is more common than most people think.
Unfortunately, it is.
And that's horrible. Mm. But it's the reality. And when we start to realize that, we realize that we all have more in common than we think. We can all work together to make a change, you know, and whether that means, you know, we've had enough and we're sick of these legislators and we're going to run for office. Okay, fine. If that's what you want to do, then do it. If it's sharing a petition, if it's, you know, working together to figure out who needs to be reelected as a judge and who needs to be pushed out. You know, getting the word out there to the community. Those things are so important. Everybody has a part to play, but not doing anything is not okay.
No, it's not, because you're just allowing it to continue, affect possibly more children, their family, Yeah. It's a vicious cycle, and it's time it ends here in New Mexico.
100%. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for sharing today. That's really all I have to say.
Thank you, Eric, so much. And again, I'm so sorry for your loss. Your brother's case had me in tears as well. But I'm glad that now you're using this platform to promote awareness. Awareness and education are the first steps. Yes, yeah. We have many more steps to come. But in order to get there, first we have to be educated and we have to be aware. And people need to start speaking up and standing up for our kids. Because who's going to? If we don't, who's going to?
Right.
You know?
You're right. Well, thank you, Joelle. I hope you have a great night. And thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe, New Mexico.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/True Consequences. Thanks for listening and stay safe, New Mexico.